from Santa Fe, I'm Joey Peters.
I'm Matthew Reichbach.
And we're back this week with the Weekly Word. Enjoyed our good Easter Passover holiday, and we've got a new episode. Justin Horwath with the Santa Fe Reporter will be on later to talk about his piece in this week's Reporter about a new 501c4.
And we'll talk about a piece I did for New Mexico Business First website where they're talking about combined reporting and the and some of the big box stores maybe getting a little bit of a break on that. And then we'll also maybe touch on the Albuquerque mayor race with Pete Dinelli getting public financing.
It should be a good one. We'll be back after this break. Later on the show today, we'll have Justin Horwath explaining New Mexico Prosperity, which is a new 501c4. Those are nonprofits that are supposed to be dedicated to social welfare, except this one looks like it's dedicated to just Democratic Party candidates.
And we'll get into that in a little bit, but I think first we wanted to talk about a piece that I actually wrote, a short piece I wrote for New Mexico Business First, or Albuquerque Business First, rather, about combined reporting and how it's really watered down at this point. Actually,
yeah.
It was Santa Fe's Senator Peter Wirth. That's been his big initiative over the years, is to get combined reporting instituted.
And this goes back to last episode. We were talking about the last minute omnibus tax bill that was rammed through in the waning seconds of the session, really. And this combined reporting, something that Senator Wirth's been working on almost a decade, feel like. And it pretty much told us what that would do, because this combined reporting became pretty much a chief part of the omnibus bill that kind of Democrats felt like, okay, there's something good in this bill. This is why we're going to vote for it. So tell us, Matt, what combined reporting is.
Yeah, combined reporting basically means that you have to pay the taxes on the income you make in the state, in that state. So, for example, right now, like a company like Target, they could claim their taxes and pay them in a different state, the income they make in New Mexico. So they can go to, say, Delaware, there's no corporate income tax, and pay taxes, I'm using air quotes there, and then pay taxes there because they don't have taxes. What Peter Wirth's bill would say is, hey, all the companies need to pay in-state income, corporate income tax. But then it got watered down to only do big box stores.
And so just for some perspective, a big box store in New Mexico, if they have a presence in another state, they can choose to pay those states' taxes.
Yeah, without combined reporting.
Combined reporting. So New Mexico loses a big share of tax money right there.
Exactly. And that's the argument against that. And that's with every corporation, but it got kind of watered down last year in order to pass, which it passed. It passed both chambers, actually, and then was vetoed by the governor when it only applied to big box stores. So basically your Walmarts, your Targets, your anything that's over 30,000 square feet.
So now what surfaced in this omnibus bill?
What do you mean?
Where the combined reporting that's in the omnibus bill,
It's kind of like an
ugly twin of Peter Wirth's original bill, right?
Well, yeah, the original bill, like I said, was for every company. Then it got watered down to just big box stores. And then from there, it got watered down again this year. So big box stores, but if they have 750 retail jobs, like, say, manufacturing or something like that, then they're exempted from this as well. And it just so happens that Walmart has a facility in Los Lunas, a distribution center that employs about 700 people, so they could probably get another, 40, 50. Well, it's unclear how many people they have. Walmart wouldn't respond to the story.
But basically, Walmart has found a loophole where they might not even have to
do
this combined reporting and pay pay taxes in the state.
Yeah, they sent a, they sent me a story showing that this is how much, you know, what we do for the community, this is how much taxes we pay and everything. They didn't really address the actual issue. It's interesting because, I mean, there's talk about high-powered lobbyists who were hired by Walmart halfway through the session when they saw combined reporting coming down the pike to exempt them. And it looks like they found a way that it would. Like, they were throwing out numbers like maybe 500 people, you know, non-retail people, maybe 1,000. And then they settled on 750. And like I said, from the news reports from when the distribution center was built, it initially said there was about 600. And I saw a news report, another news report that said there were 700 people at distribution center. So it's right about that 750.
They should do a 749. But so that's it looks like on the surface a big blow to this bill. The idea of this bill.
Yeah, and then the Tax Research Institute, the New Mexico Tax Research Institute, did a study on it. They basically said, all the big box stores are going to reorganize in some way to avoid this eventually. Like, they might get hit the first couple years, but it's not going to bring in. It probably won't bring in any additional revenue over the 5-6 years down the road.
And that was you kind of just answered my next question, which is who is actually going to have to pay combined reporting.
I mean, it's just think of any big box store, 30,000 square feet or more, that's retail. So your Walmarts, your Best Buys, if there's any of those left, Targets, Barnes and Nobles are still there.
But as you said, any of these can easily re-scramble and
just restructure and proponents of it say, that's the idea, is to make them bring these other possibly higher paying jobs to New Mexico, for like a distribution center rather than just, retail. So that's that issue that I'm sure that we'll be seeing a lot coming in the next years. And I think the entire tax package, we'll be talking about the effects on that for quite some time.
Another thing you've been looking into is the Albuquerque mayor's race.
Yeah, the mayoral race down in Albuquerque, which, even when you I just recently moved to Albuquerque. I lived in Rio Rancho, but what Albuquerque does really affects the entire state in many ways, so it's almost like a statewide issue at this point. But what I wrote about this week was Pete Dinelli. He's the Democrat who's running, and it's a nonpartisan race, but he's the Democrat running that has a lot of the union support and a lot of Democratic support. He actually qualified for public financing, which is a big deal in Albuquerque. It's $362,000 for campaign funds.
And so that's something that Mayor Barry, who's, like you said, it's nonpartisan, but a Republican. He was a Republican state legislator before he came mayor. That's not something that he's trying to do, right? Public financing.
No. In fact, Dinelli's the only one who qualified for public financing. There's three other candidates that qualified for the ballot by getting enough signatures. There's Pete Dinelli, Paul Hay, Margaret Aragon de Chavez, who ex-wife of former Mayor Chavez, Mayor Marty, and then of course the incumbent Mayor Richard Berry. And of those, Dinelli's the only one who qualified for public financing.
So what kind of impact will that have?
Well, it means he doesn't have to spend time fundraising. It means that he has a limited amount of money. He only has $362,000. But one thing that is a big deal with this is it's like an organizational test, basically, because you have to, not only do you have to get signatures, which honestly, signatures is something that any pretty well organized candidate can do, get the amount of signatures needed. But you also have to get 1% of the population, $5 donations from them.
So $5 donation from 1% of Albuquerque's population.
Or 1% of registered voters in Albuquerque.
A $5 donation each from them. And that's a hefty task.
Yeah, that's 3,621. You have to convince 3,621 people to give you $5, basically. And they have to be registered voters. And but that does mean, like I said, it's a huge organizational test between him, the labor groups that support him, that they just announced that they're kind of getting ready for the mayoral race by hiring some staffers and stuff, and the Democratic Party. It's all of them combined going up. Basically, they're just going up against Richard Berry, who has the Republican and business establishment behind him.
Yeah, so that, I mean, Dinelli's looked at as the underdog in this race.
Anytime you're going up against an incumbent, you're going to be the underdog.
But what does this say about his actual chances in November?
Well, it's in October. In October.
I'm not an Albuquerque resident.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to take out an incumbent. You have to be really well organized. You have to have a little bit of luck on your side. And honestly, Richard Berry is probably going to have a little bit more money. But then something that we'll talk about in a little bit, those 501c4s and how, we'll probably mention super PACs as that comes in, but which is different.
This whole kind of brave new world of campaign finance.
Yeah, these outside groups are going to be coming in. How much money are they going to be spending? That sort of stuff. I see the collecting those signatures and getting that money as a huge organizational test, which is something you need to do to get out to vote, especially in an off-year election where the only thing on the ballot is municipal stuff. I mean, all there is mayor, city council.
Well, I mean, what I was trying to get at earlier, does this say that Dinelli kind of has more of a organization, more ground-level support than people thought before?
Maybe, but he has the Democratic people behind him. He has the Democratic Party behind him. He has labor behind him, a lot of labor, the big old groups.
Yeah.
So I think that he was always kind of the best chance for Democrats. And like I said, it's nonpartisan, but the parties get very involved in these races. I mean, the Republican Party was one of the main reasons Richard Berry was elected in the first place. So it's going to be an interesting mayoral election in October.
Well, with that, let's bring Justin Horwath in next. We'll talk about the new 501c4.
Yeah, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have Justin to tell us what a 501c4 is and why this one's a little bit unusual.
So we have Justin Horwath here, who just, as we said earlier, wrote an article about a new 501c4 called New Mexico Prosperity. Justin, can you tell us what a 501c4 is and why this one's unusual?
Yeah, sure. A 501c4 is the specific designation for a type of nonprofit. And these nonprofits are supposed to be kind of so-called social advocacy groups that advocate for the common good and general welfare of the people in the community.
And then we've come up with these political nonprofits a lot with Karl Rove on the national level, Americans for Prosperity, these sort of groups. And this one is kind of falling afoul even more than those groups from not doing politics. Can you kind of tell us what happened?
Yeah, sure. Well, we actually obtained an internal copy of a New Mexico Prosperity document that kind of shows, at least at the beginning of its formation, it was specifically designed to kind of protect Democrats in the House of Representatives.
And that's in this week's edition of The Reporter?
Yeah. You could pick it up in this week's edition if you could find it. On a side note, I'd like to encourage all of our listeners, if they see anybody stealing our papers in Santa Fe, to try to catch this perpetrator. I actually just had to talk to a police officer. He's taking the papers because apparently he's upset about the content of the cover issue.
About the cover, and I think Joey has some insight to that.
The cover image itself, which features my bare legs.
Yeah.
And anyways, so basically, it's supposed to be for the social welfare, these 501c4s, and they came out in a draft document expressly said, hey, we're here to elect Democrats.
Yeah, we're here. We're here to both protect incumbent Democrats, knock out Republicans, and kind of do a lot of campaign activities like kind of robocalls and sending out mailers and et cetera against the governor, Susana Martinez. So and the gentleman who formed this nonprofit, his name is John Lipschutz. He's kind of he's pretty deep within Democratic circles in New Mexico. He's worked for labor unions and the Democratic campaign committee, and he just formed his nonprofit on February 13th. And we should note that I talked to him, and he said by the time he formed the nonprofit, its mission had changed to specific an issue advocacy nonprofit, which is what this group is supposed to be. He says the nonprofit will focus on issues like the economy, education, immigration, et cetera.
And so what kind of recourse is there for if they do just veer into pure electioneering? Does the IRS get involved?
Yeah, the IRS can get involved. It's kind of just like a lot of federal bureaucracies, slow to keep up with the formation of these really politically active 501c4s that were probably the biggest spenders, outspending super PACs
definitely
in the 2010 elections, and that trend probably continued 2012. But the IRS can audit these nonprofits, and there has been a precedent specifically in New Mexico with a 501c4 called Emerge New Mexico, which was specifically training Democratic women to run for office, which runs afoul of IRS guidelines because of that openly partisan mission.
Yeah, because you can't do anything that's just for one party or the other openly, at least. But
yeah, exactly. And I should note that these groups, they can throw themselves into politics if they want to. They can run so-called issue ads. They can't say don't vote for a candidate, but they can say tell Barack Obama to stop the spending, for instance. And so these are the type of ads that you see. And they can also do a limited amount of lobbying. And the IRS kind of measures that by seeing if they put a majority of their funds, their resources, and their time into either social issues, kind of advocating for specific social issues like education, or into more partisan political advocacy.
And it's basically, so if they have 51% that they're doing on advocacy issues, that's good. I think that Joey had a question. Oh, maybe not. He was just reaching for the microphone.
Well, I Justin, you've been following this the super PACs, the nonprofits. What you found this week kind of say about the whole, you know, what I said earlier, this brave new world of campaign finance?
Well, I think it really shows that, I think it kind of reflects on the 2010 Citizens United decision and just what really unlimited money, unlimited spending in politics means. And I think it also shows that it's not even, this group was formed on February 13th, and this is not campaign season right now. So this is kind of what the political consultants are labeling the off season. And it's interesting, looking at this document, they say they're going to form a 501c4 to kind of promote their issues during the off-season. And once the campaign season rolls around, they're going to open up an affiliated super PAC.
Which is something that a lot of – that's one way to get around these pretty weekend campaign finance rules now is a lot of groups do that. They have these super PACs that are aligned with their 501c4s. And they just happen to share the same office, have the same founders, and presumably have the same funders. But one of the advantages of 501c4 is you can't see who gives them money, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting. In 1957, the U.S. Supreme Court specifically said that 501c4s, at least in that case, do not have to disclose donors. Now, that case concerned the NAACP. The state of Alabama was trying to compel it to disclose its agents and donors and whatnot to kind of shame Southerners from funding this organization. And the Supreme Court kind of set a precedent back then that they don't have to disclose donors. So that, you know, fast forward 50, 60 years later with the 2010 Citizens United decision, and these groups are becoming political heavyweights.
And a lot of nonprofits, they don't like – they like they don't have to disclose donors because, like, groups that, you know, like Planned Parenthood, they say, you know, obviously, you know, there's been murders of abortion doctors. What if they went after the funders? There's, you know, domestic violence groups. So that's one issue that actually a lot of nonprofits that have nothing to do with electoral politics, they support just because of some of their donors might get some backlash.
And New Mexico Prosperity, the document that leaked to you says, you know, we want to protect the Democratic House majority in New Mexico, and we want to take the governor's seat back from the Republicans. Obviously they're supposed to be nonpartisan. Now, the person, what's his name again?
John Lipschutz.
He told you that this was just a working document?
Well, I think the exact quote was something that he said, this is one of the earlier planning documents they were trying to figure out in the formation of the C4 that was circulated, he tells me, around January. Now, about a month later, they registered with the Public Regulation Commission, and by that time, Lipschutz says that he had consulted attorneys about just specifically what the 501c4 could do, et cetera. And
which is not that.
Yeah, which is specifically not what's in this document, as Marcus Owens, a former IRS head, tells me. But he couldn't really specify what exact issues this New Mexico Prosperity is going to zero in on. He tells me they're going to kind of keep their issue set kind of broad right now.
I'd imagine that it would be what their polling shows is best for Democratic candidates and what's worse for Republican candidates, just like these national groups like, you know, Americans for Prosperity, which I like to mention, and which I keep mentioning, these ones that spent hundreds of millions of dollars that they did on the national level.
Yeah, exactly. And in this document, it's interesting, they specifically say they're going to do polling and research, and they say that we will run at least 2 landscape polls in 2013 to gauge how our operations are affecting the electorate and to fine-tune our messaging. And I talked to Vicki Harrison over at Common Cause New Mexico, that's kind of a good government group, and she tells me that these 501c4s must not pick issues that they know are a certain party, i.e. the Republican Party, stand against. So they can't specifically disseminate partisan information.
I think another thing to note in 501c4s or super PACs like these, they always seem to have the same type of names, like New Mexico Prosperity.
Very innocuous names, yeah.
Yeah, that don't really tell you. They kind of have vague language, like Reform New Mexico Now, Patriot Majority.
Yeah, names, exactly, names that...
I love America PAC.
Names that everybody can agree with. I mean, who is against
Eagle, New Mexico Freedom, Prosperity? Cheeseburger.
Yeah,
we should start our own pack. We come up with our own nickname, with our own very anonymous nickname, or like what was Stephen Colbert's pack called? Was it like America for America or something?
Yeah, Americans for America, or yeah.
Okay, but anyways, a little bit off field there. But so, what do you think is going to come of this?
Well, I'm not too sure. I mean, I don't. It'll be interesting to see what exactly the New Mexico Prosperity nonprofit is going to do in the coming year, and just how Lipschutz and the others who form this nonprofit are going to handle the dissemination of information, and whether they're truly going to be nonpartisan, or as this document suggests, whether they're going to be kind of a partisan vehicle for House Democrats and against Governor Susana Martinez.
Well, we'll keep an eye on New Mexico Prosperity and what they do, and we'll keep an eye on the people stealing the newspaper out of the drop boxes.
Yeah, anybody, please take a picture of this guy if you see him stealing any issues of the Santa Fe Reporter. We need a picture of him.
That's the important thing here. If there's anything from this podcast you remember, take a picture of somebody grabbing huge quantities of Santa Fe Reporters. Okay, well, I think that for this week's edition, that just about does it. A little bit shorter than normal, but maybe you can listen to the whole thing on your ride to work instead of having to split it up.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week. And I'm Joey Peters with the Santa Fe Reporter.
I'm Justin Horwath with the Santa Fe Reporter.
And I'm Matthew Reichbach, New Mexico Telegram, nmtelegram.com. I'm freelancing for Albuquerque Business First, so send me your tips on how business relates to politics. And we'll see you guys next week.